We're ready to get started. My name is Sally Caputo. I'm the Director of Operations and Programming for AMCF. I'd like to welcome you to our webinar today, Management Consulting. Why does it exist, and why is it such a great career opportunity? Before we get started, I'd like to let everyone know that we encourage you to ask questions throughout the webinar, and we will address them at the end of the webinar. We do have a lot of people on the call today, so we'll make every attempt to get to all of your questions. If we don't get to all of the questions, feel free to submit them to info@amcf.org via email, or you can submit them to our burning questions section of our Consulting Career Connection website, as you see there on your screen. We'll also have a couple polling questions today on our webinar. It's a simple mouse click. Your responses are kept anonymous, and we do encourage you to participate in the polling questions. And one note, I do see that someone has asked how to log in. If anyone's having issues with that, we will be sending an email again right now with the login details that was sent out a couple times. We'll do it one more time in case people can't access the web. So with that, I'll turn it over to John Firth, President and CEO of AMCF. John?
Great. Many thanks, Sally. Just a couple words about AMCF. We are the Global Trade Association for the management consulting industry, and we run between 30 and 35 programs a year, of which Consulting Career Connection makes up about four or five of those. This is the first webinar of the series that we do every school year for university students, both undergraduate, graduate, and then also PhD students who are looking for a career in consulting. In general, though, AMCF is here for the management consulting industry to speak with a collective voice and to promote knowledge exchange and professional standards for the community of management consulting firms around the world. And our mission, as you can read here, is to promote an environment that fosters the success of management consulting firms worldwide and the value they deliver to their consultants or to their clients and to their consultants, which brings us to the next part, which is our university program. We do recognize that this industry is an industry of talent and of people such as those on this webinar. And we have developed and launched this outreach program as a way to clarify questions, to interest people in the profession of consulting, but also to prepare you for the rigorous interview process and also a career in consulting, which will not necessarily be addressed in these webinars, but in upcoming webinars, for example, on October 24th. So our objective is to build awareness of the industry as a desirable career choice. And as Sally said, you can go to our, in addition to coming to our webinars, you can go to the consultingcareerconnection.com, which is a community-based platform full with blogs, answers to questions, articles, and so forth. And very quickly, I'll show you a picture of that website here. As Sally mentioned, before we get started, we wanted to ask a few polling questions to see who's on the webinar so we can address maybe more specifically. And so the question is, have you ever worked in management consulting before? And we'll show you the results. And not unexpectedly, most of you have not. And we'll let some of you continue responding before we continue. Great. Now let's move to the next polling question, which is, where are you currently based? And again, I'm showing you the responses. Majority is in the Northeast, but we also have quite a number in the Southeast this time around. Not so much in the West Coast, which is disappointing, but I'm glad we, again, have such good attendance for the webinar anyways. And then let's have you tell us what level of education you are currently in or in the process of completing. And I see that the bulk of you are doing graduate or master's programs. but we do have quite a lot of undergraduate and a good portion that are pursuing PhD programs. And then, of course, Ashley, we'd like to know what it is that you're majoring in or what your field of concentration is. And I'm glad to see we have a good smattering of non-business degrees being pursued, particularly engineering, liberal arts. As you'll hear in a moment, this is an industry that prides itself on the diversification of the people that it hires. Obviously, a business degree is a perfect approach or perfect degree to have to get started in the industry, but certainly we are looking for IT specialists, engineers, everyone who's represented on this webinar, and there is the right firm for you somewhere out there, and we hope we can help you find that and get yourself started. And finally, which group best describes you, student career counselor, active consultant, or other? Obviously, this is a webinar for students, but we're happy to see also that we have a number of our career counselors on the phone with us here, as well as a large group of other, which I'm not quite sure what that is, but we'll call it interested parties in the consulting industry. Good. Well, this gives us a good sense of who's on the phone. With this, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Joe O'Mahony, a senior lecturer at Cardiff University and a former consultant, and he will introduce himself and get started with the agenda. Joe?
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Maybe you can speak a little louder.
Fantastic. Okay. I wanted to thank the AMCF for this opportunity to talk to your audience. As John said, my background is in consultancy. I've recently joined academia. Prior to that, I was in a variety of consulting roles, and I'm hopefully going to share some of that with you now. I hope my accent doesn't put too many of you off, and I hope that too much isn't lost in translation. What we're going to talk about is, first of all, the industry background. I'm going to talk about the structure of the industry, what it looks like internationally, and how it's set up. Secondly, we're going to talk about industry trends and challenges, how the industry has changed over the last few years and the challenges that this poses for the industry. And then finally, we're going to talk about what all of this means for consultancy careers, which is, I suppose, what many of you will be interested in. So if we start with the industry background, the first question a lot of you now, I realize many of you may know the answer to this, but the question is, what is management consultancy? In my view, it's about adding value to client industries, and that's primarily through identifying problems or opportunities for clients, researching and recommending solutions to those problems or opportunities, and then helping implement the solution. Now, traditionally, different consultancies have specialized in different sides of this. So, for example, McKinsey's, for example, would typically focus on identifying opportunities and then recommending a solution. They, less so these days, but traditionally they wouldn't have got too detailed into the implementing the solution and then running it afterwards. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide. And this slide really talks to the idea that there is pure management consultancy. And this is traditionally around topics like strategy, change management, human resources, and things like that. However, for those of you that have an interest in different aspects, some of you might be IT experts, others might be coming from an engineering background, there is also management consultancy that overlaps with these areas. So it has aspects of management because everyone knows that IT systems need to integrate with business systems, your tax and audit and finance functions need to integrate with your business overall. So there's lots of specialisms that consultants can move into if they're not just in pure management consultancy. That's good news for graduates generally. Okay, so if we now move on to the structure of the industry and what it looks like, management consultancy was born in the USA, as many things were, including Bruce Springsteen, I believe. And therefore, that's where the dominant market is. 51% of the consulting industry is based in North America. The vast majority of that is based in the USA. Europe is still a relatively big market, primarily in Germany and the UK. Countries outside of Germany and the UK tend to have much smaller consulting industries. That's interesting in itself. I'm doing some research in that area. Emerging markets are very interesting at the moment because that's where the growth is, especially in Asia and South America. So that's in terms of the geographical structure. It's a big pie. We're talking $300 billion worth of industry. So it's a huge industry, which is why there's so many opportunities for graduates here. If we move on to the sectors within consultancy, now financial services, that is providing management consultancy advice to the financial services sector, has always been an incredibly dominant area. That's where a lot of the money is, that's where a lot of the complexity is, and that's where the big projects are. However, there are also other important sectors. The public sector is obviously very important at the moment. Lots of changes going on, not just in the US, but across the world. Governments are trying to cut back on their spending, and so they're implementing changes in the health service and other aspects of government work. If you look at the consulting industry generally, it's very often demand for consulting services is driven by change. And whether that's technological change, changes of government, or changes in legislation. And even if it's not necessarily good change for the country, very often consultancies can be involved in things during a recession, such as cost-cutting, downsizing, and things like that. Okay, let's move on to look at what consultancies
Joe, I hate to interrupt, but we do have a question here about the particular focus for consulting in the geographies. I know you're going to cover some of that in a little while. Did you want to add anything about how maybe the geographies differentiate themselves in terms of what is done?
Sure. Well, I mean, John, you'll know more about this than I do, but the UK and the US consulting industry is very similar. We've got a high dominance of financial services industry. We've got a fairly strong structure in all areas. However, once you get outside that, different countries have a different focus, not only in terms of sector, but also in the terms of the life cycle of their businesses. So if you think, for example, about the normal life cycle of a business that might start up, grow, mature, and then begin to, say, outsourcing a lot of its work, then companies in the clients in the US and the UK, Western Europe, tend to be quite mature. These big outsourcing projects where HR is outsourced to China or IT development is outsourced to India. And that's very typical of Western countries. In developing countries, there's a lot more activity around growth, sort of supporting companies as they expand internationally and as they grow their organizations. I don't know if you have anything that you want to add to that, John.
Yes, Joe. I would say that when you look at Asia, Asia is quite different than a lot of things. Chinese, for example, the Chinese market tends to really like to have consulting wrapped around technology. Whereas in Europe, you tend to have a lot more emphasis on pure consulting without more, I would say, technology agnostic. So we're finding that the Asian markets tend to really want to have an additive to it. The pure advisory doesn't quite work as well unless it's wrapped around technology. So we find a lot of the technology consulting firms very, very strong. As I said, Europe, the strategy firms are, I would say, the strongest. I actually worked for a strategy firm in Europe for a while. Whereas what you're finding in North America is a lot, and we'll talk about this in a second, the Big Four, the advisory services of the Big Four are growing just immensely and are bringing with it a lot more of the operational improvement type of projects that are certainly paid for and enjoyed in Europe. But I get the sense that Europe, and it's really just a sense at this point, that strategy business is more in demand. When you get a little bit more deep into the numbers, you'll find certain segments, and we go to market versus by segments, as Joe had mentioned a few minutes ago. You'll find that whilst Europe or the UK, the retail segment may be a little stronger, it's not that strong in the US. But for that, traditionally, or not traditionally, but in the last couple of years, the government consulting market has been very strong in North America, whereas governments have definitely cut back on their consulting spend in Europe over the last year or two. So you see some differences in segments, but I would say one thing is strong. It's certainly, as Joe just mentioned, pretty much in all the markets, I would say the segmentation is pretty much true. As I said, public sector may have decreased in importance in Europe, but financial services is still probably worldwide the most important, followed by energy and utilities and healthcare. I would say that's pretty much across the world. So why don't we go on to the next one, which is how we segment the industry.
Great. Thank you, John. Okay, so this is a gross simplification, but for those of you not familiar with the consulting industry, it provides a relatively straightforward way of understanding what different consultancies do and at what levels of the organization this is relevant. So if we look at the top of the organization where the strategy work, business case for new opportunities, and the vision tends to be stated, you traditionally get the strategy firms, obviously, McKinsey, Boston Consulting Group, Bain, etc. These projects tend to be shorter, and because they're shorter, they tend to be a lot more expensive, also because they have much more impact on the rest of the company. They tend to be more expensive. McKinsey consultants generally charge themselves out at much higher rates than people further down the value chain. So once you go down from that, away from strategy consultancy, you get the work in the middle of the organization. This tends to be around once a decision and a direction has been made. Somebody needs to manage the project. Somebody needs to manage the program, make sure that things are delivered and the KPIs are hit. This might be project management, program management, or, for example, planning. And again, this is a simplification, but you tend to get a lot of the big four work in here. I'm going to go on to how this picture has changed later on, so don't take all of this at immediate face value. And once you get to the operational level, the third level, where you get a lot of systems integration, IT development, training, process work, where the nuts and bolts are actually put together, then you get these huge implementation companies, the IBMs and the Accentures of the world. Now, although these projects have relatively low margins compared to strategy work, these projects can be massive. We can be talking tens of billions. So although the margins can be a lot smaller, the volume of these projects can mean that the profits actually mount up. In order to run one of these companies, you need a vast amount of capital simply because of the size of the project that you're taking on. Okay, so let's look at the next slide, which is around where clients are spending their money. So who do they buy from? This is from some great research by a company called Source for Consulting, who are a great source for consulting information. As you can see, looking at the right-hand pie chart, most of the spend tends to go on the big firms. This isn't surprising because the big firms very often have the capability to manage projects that smaller firms simply can't. However, small and medium-sized firms get a reasonable amount of revenue, but also make up a huge percentage of the actual total number of consulting firms. And this is why if you're a graduate or you're thinking of going into the consulting industry, it's important not just to look at the big firms. The big brand names are fantastic on the CV, but if you can't get into them, there's a lot of very good medium-sized and small firms that will give you a good all-round feel for the industry and give you a lot of experience. If we look at the type of firm on the left-hand side, if we look at where clients buy in terms of type, the big story here is, as John already indicated, the big four firms. The growth in big four consulting has been absolutely tremendous over the last 10 years, and we'll look at some of the reasons for that later, but we'll leave that as is for the time being. If we go on to the next slide, we can see how the consulting industry has grown. And this is only over the last few years. If you look at the consulting industry over the last 30 years, the last calculation I did was that consulting revenues had increased by 10,000% over the last 30 years, which is an incredible growth rate. That's primarily in the US and Western Europe. However, across the world, it's one of the big success stories. Now, this growth has been pretty solid really up until the last few years. And if you skip on to the next slide, we can see the impact of the recession. Consultancy is a clients-driven industry, and that means that when clients feel pain, consultancies very often feel pain. So starting from 2008 onwards, consultancy took a big hit. Now, if you look at the growth rate, that's not a massive hit, but it was the first time in a long time that consulting revenues had decreased. The good news for the consulting industry is that the clients are starting to get good news, so that from last year, consulting revenues started to creep up. And that really reflected, and do correct me if I'm wrong, John, but that really reflected, in my view, a shift in client thinking from cutting costs and making redundancies through to looking at opportunities for growth. And this has created some very exciting projects that consultants prefer working on rather than having to cut costs and make redundancies.
I would agree with that partially. One thing I would also say is that we look at the industry also in terms of early indicators of a recession and early indicators coming out of a recession and late indicators. Generally, strategy consulting is the first segment that starts to slip, that there's a sign that there's a problem in the economy, mostly because a lot of it is discretionary spending, they're shorter-term projects, it's easier to cancel a project, and so forth. The leading indicators are IT projects. And IT projects, because they're long-term and they're vast amounts of money, it's often hard to switch off an IT project, even if you're going into a recession. And what we see in 2010, which was, as you alluded to, some of the worst decreases in the history of consulting, and we weren't alone in that, a lot of what kept going was indeed the big IT projects, transformation projects, whereas a lot of what we lost were these more discretionary spend projects we saw in strategy. And likewise, what pulled us out of the right, or when we knew the recession was over, was that the discretionary spending projects, i.e. the strategy projects, took off again. The IT projects, those that were turned off take that much longer to get going again. So again, they're a bit of a lagging indicator, when the economy starts up again. So that's just a little bit of insight into, what happens to the industry when we go into these kind of recessions. The good news is based on my market input and feedback from my board that I get regularly, we are seeing no indicators going off that we're about to hit a recession. In fact, it's the opposite. We're beginning to think that 2013 is going to be another boom year for the industry. So,
that's good news.
With that?
Good. Okay, so that's the historical view. If we look at a snapshot of what's happening now, we have the EU and US roughly pegged at $100 billion of revenue each. Those figures vary depending on where you look. But growth has been relatively flat in those markets for a few years. It sort of goes up and down a bit. There's real growth in Asia and South America, of course, but these markets are still relatively small. But they're of increasing interest to consultancy companies, both in the West and the consultancy companies that are homegrown in those countries. Part of the interesting side of this is that for the first time in the last few years, there's been strong competition coming out of India and China around homegrown consultancies. Now, that's not just that they're competing for clients on their own turf, but companies like Tata Consulting and Infosys have increasingly made inroads into Western markets, competing against some of our implementers and outsourcers when it comes to these big projects. So that's an interesting trend that's happening. And over the last 10 years, consulting industries have taken a very proactive stance with internationalization, not just cutting and pasting their own business models in overseas markets, but also taking on more overseas graduates, bringing them up through the company, and adopting different business models when it comes to expanding. And a lot of this is simply following the clients as they expand internationally as well. So it's an exciting international arena at the moment. And for those of you interested in travel, it's probably one of the best career options available. Okay, and the other thing I would say in terms of state of play is looking, and I mentioned this earlier, the growth of the Big Four. This needs to be placed in context around the turn of the millennium. The Big Four were put under pressure by the SEC to spin off their advisory arms, and all but one of them did this. So in effect, they've started from scratch building up their consultancy arms, but it's been an incredible business success story. Consultancy or advisory work is now almost as important as anything else that these companies do. And these companies also always rate as some of the best employers. If you look at the graduate surveys, these companies always peg up there. Traditionally, they've been associated with sort of program management, mid-range work, but many of them have now increasingly taken on the McKinseys and the Bains of the world very successfully. So these are certainly companies that you might like to consider when you're applying for jobs. I talked earlier about how the market has changed. If we move on to the next slide, we can see...
Joe, we have a quick question I can answer. The question came up, are the Big Four counted as part of the financial services consulting?
Sure.
I would turn it around and say financial service consulting is a segment. The Big Four do advise and consult the financial services industry and do provide financial services consulting, in the sense of financial systems, strategy consulting, and so forth. They don't do financial advisory, if that's how I understand the question.
Sure.
I don't know if you would add anything to that, Joe?
I've done bits and pieces of work as a contractor with many of these companies, and sometimes it is financial services, but a lot of the time you can end up doing, you know, pure traditional consultancy work around change management and strategy. So these are some of the big boys now. It's an interesting market out there.
Exactly, and as I said, consulting to the financial services industry, the Big Four do a lot of consulting to the financial services industry.
Okay. So if we look at who's doing what, this is really a rather crude sketch of where companies are moving. So, traditionally, as I said earlier, the AD Littles, ADL, the Boston Consulting Group and McKinsey up at the strategy end, and then the Accentures and IBMs down at the other end. Now, this, if we move on to the next slide, you can see a subtle shift in this market where, there we go. If we move on to the next one, again, relatively crudely, but the McKinseys and Bains have started to move down the value chain, getting into program management, whereas companies like Accenture and IBM have tried to move upstream and have more vertical integration with the products that they're offering. So what the result of this is that the middle of the market around implementation and program management is getting quite crowded. There's a lot of competition out there, and we'll talk more about that later. In terms of the state of play, and if we look at what sectors are interesting at the moment now, this varies hugely, and from year to year, if you talk to a consultant, they'll tell you a completely different story. Financial services are always interesting. There's always change. There's always reform, especially with some of the legislation that's come in over the last few years. Healthcare, especially in the USA and the UK, is subject to a vast amount of change at the moment, not just around cuts in spending, but the way in which healthcare is delivered. And then if we look at the consulting services, strategy after a long period of decline is starting to look more interesting. As John said, more in Europe than anywhere else. And, you know, you can find a lot more information about this on the CCC website. Okay. So
and here we have a question, Joe.
Well, okay.
Coming to public sector, what sort of firms do public sector consulting? And what kind of clients are public sector or considered public sector?
Okay, well, a long time ago, you could have said that there were firms that only, you know, specialized in public sector, but it's become such a big market that all of the big players are now doing big public sector projects. You won't find any of the top 20 consultancies or even the top 100 consultancies, in my view, that aren't doing public sector work. I recently did a project that compared public sector consulting with private sector consulting. Some of the messages that were coming out of this research didn't necessarily reflect well on the public sector. Because they're spending public money, they need to be a lot more accountable. That means that decisions are possibly more bureaucratic, that managers are sometimes a bit less innovative, and that there are more hoops and hurdles to jump over and through than there might be in the private sector. The big difference, in my view, is one of procurement, and we'll talk more about this later, but it's around how a project is purchased. And in the public sector, you legally have to go through procurement for certain size of projects, and this makes a big difference to the levels of innovation and the levels of creativity that people are getting out of their consultancy. So I believe that's changing as procurement is getting more sophisticated, but it's still relatively there's still more bureaucracy in the public sector than you might get in the private sector, and that's sometimes reflected in the fees that are paid. Given the choice, I would generally prefer to get private sector fees than public sector fees. I'm not sure if that's the same in the USA, John.
Can you see the questions?
Hello, John?
Yeah. We have a few questions here that I think might be useful in addressing. For example, under what services does marketing fall? Does it come under strategy? I would rephrase that a little bit. Is marketing projects, marketing-related projects, those are often done as part of strategy consulting. But then if you're talking about customer relationship management projects, customer engagement projects, those can have a technology piece to it. But if you're talking about pure sort of marketing strategy, that is often comes under strategy. I don't know, Joe, if you would add that.
Yeah, I'd agree completely. Marketing is one of these verticals that ticks off at a strategic level, at a program management level, and at an operations level. There's a lot of what is called big data projects in marketing at the moment where, you know, customer information is being plowed through to make better sales. So, yeah, marketing ticks pretty much all the boxes, I would say.
And finally, I see a question here about recruiting strategy in terms of students who are at, say, non-target schools and or changing industries. This is not addressed in this webinar. This is a webinar about the industry, so please look for future webinars when those sort of topics will be addressed. So let's move on to the next section, Joe.
Okay, good. Okay, so this is really, I'm just going to cover one slide here. The industry has changed a lot over the last 10 years. And those changes not only affect the industry, but also affect the type of work you're going to be doing if you get into this industry. So I've listed some of the trends on the left-hand side and some of the consequences of those trends on the right-hand side. So if we look at the left-hand side, firstly, clients have got more sophisticated. 10 years ago, in what many might call the golden age of consultancy, clients would generally come to, I'm simplifying here, but clients would often come to a consultant and say, what should I do? And that's a wonderful opportunity for a consultant to be creative, to come up with new ideas, and to educate the client in the ways in which business works outside of the client's own area of expertise. These days, clients very often have an MBA. Sometimes they've come from the consulting industry, and often they'll have been in many more jobs. So the client is now more sophisticated, and they're much more likely to come to the consultancy and say, I want this project, I want it done in this way, I want it to cost this amount, and it's got to be done by Thursday. So clients have got more sophisticated and more demanding. Part of that is the next point, which is around procurement, which is that the people who traditionally purchased computing supplies, paper clips and pens, in many cases, especially in the public sector, are now buying consulting services. Now, their job is to hammer the consultancy down on price. They do other things as well, but price is a big point here. And this has hit the average day rate that consultants can charge. And this, in turn, has had an effect that we'll talk about in a minute. The other big change is increased competition. I hinted about this earlier, but there's a lot more consultancies competing for work out there. And this has increased the amount of competition between consultancies and, again, has put pressure on pay rate. The other big change in the sector is the number of partnerships. For those of you that have studied business, you'll know that partnerships tend to have a longer-term horizon when it comes to investment and payback. So So partnerships are very often keen to put vast amounts of money into innovation, research and development, and things like that. Whereas PLCs, companies floated on the stock exchange, tend to want results more quickly. And so you'll generally find, and there are exceptions to this, you'll generally find utilization rates in partnerships lower than those in PLCs. And I'll talk about the effects of that in a minute. So you've got all of these trends happening in the industry. What effect do they have? Well, I've mentioned the fees. Although consultancies are still bringing in a lot of money, their profit margins are lower now than they used to be. And this has had an impact on things like pay, utilization rates. Now, utilization rate is the percentage of time that you spend on billable hours. When I was a consultant, my utilization rate was around 65%, 70%. I was in Deloitte a couple of weeks ago, and I was in a department where the utilization rate was 90%. Now, that's a lot more billable work, and that's a hard thing to sustain if you're in the industry. The other side of the other consequence is that consultancies now have to demonstrate value. There is no longer adequate simply to walk away from a project and say, we've done a good job. Clients want you to be able to demonstrate that you've done a good job. I've also put a point here about commodified products, and this is why I have a picture of a chef moving to McDonald's. And this, again, is a simplification, but it's one that gets the message across. In the old days, if I can put it like that, a consultancy might come to you, as a master chef might come to you, ask what you want, and do a tailor-made product for you. There are very few consultancies out there that do that. They're much more inclined now to produce standardized, commodified products that they can take off the shelf, that they can tweak here and there, and this enables the consultancy to sell their expertise in a much more packaged, standardized way. As I say, there are exceptions to this, especially in strategy consultancy, but one of the big changes I've noticed is that in the industry, products and services are now much more standardized. And part of this is a reflection in the changing structure of the consulting industry. For those of you that know about the industry, there's something called leverage, which is basically the ratio of partners to consultants. And that ratio has increased massively. So in the old days where you might have got 10 consultants for every partner, it's now not uncommon to see 20, 30, or even 40 consultants for every partner. And this has impacts on the career. I won't go into this in any more detail, but if you want to know more, I'm happy to answer email questions or questions later. Okay, so John, shall we move on to the next slide? Fantastic. Okay, so we talked about the industry, how it's structured and how it's changing, and the question now is, what impact does all of this have on the consultancy career? Well, one of the questions is why should we be bothered at all in answering this question? And the answer is that the consultancies are still rated as some of the top employers to work for. The McKinsey's, the Bain's, and the Deloitte's, the big four, are always up there in the top 10 or top 20 of employers. And there's good reasons for that. They pay well. You get to travel the world. You get a vast amount of work experience. And when you leave the consulting industry, as many do, you generally get to go on a better job than if you'd been working your way up the management ladder in a client firm. The consequence of this is that if we move to the next slide, a good 30% of those graduates doing top MBAs move into the consulting industry. Now, this is the figures from the top MBAs, but even in MBAs all around the world, it's the number one career choice of MBA students, and for very good reasons.
And if I could just jump in, Joe, in terms of just hinging on this question about career changers that came up, many, many people in many different kinds of programs, not just MBA programs, are potentially thinking of not going into engineering or not becoming a doctor if they're in that program. Consulting firms aren't great at finding those people, but when they do, they're considered very valuable hires. One of the things we are trying to do at the association is facilitate more of these sort of graduate programs, but also undergraduate programs that aren't necessarily MBA programs to help our member firms and the industry as a whole to get to them and to find them, because they tend to be very valuable recruits. The other thing I would say is for many MBA students, they are doing this as a career change. Very often, the example that's often given to me is the ballet dancer who decides she or he are finished with the arts and want to go into business. They do an MBA. Those are very interesting candidates for consulting firms. Again, it's a very, very broad, very diverse group that the consulting industry hires, because we have such very broad and diverse groups of clients and services we offer to them. So, again, without going into the details of how you strategize it, this is a very good industry for those of you who are looking to make a career change and have skill sets that the industry is looking for. So it's not just MBA MBA programs that the top firms go to, but they look at all kinds of backgrounds and programs as well.
Yeah, okay. I agree completely, John. And that's especially true of engineering. I noticed we had a lot of engineers on the call. If informal feedback is anything to go by, engineers seem to make outstanding consultants. It's something about the logical way they approach problem solving. Okay, so there's a vast range of terminology that's used in different firms. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but if we skip to the next slide, I've simplified this in some ways. And this is really what the career structure looks like. The bottom two levels, the analysts and the consultants, very often known as the grinders, because they're the people that grind out the work. They'll generally be the people that, if you're a graduate from a degree program, you'll be going in at an analyst or consultant level, perhaps if you've got a bit of work experience. They tend to deliver the work. They get the work done. The minders, which are the associates or senior consultants or the project leaders, to go up a level, are the people that mind the people who are doing the work. So they do a bit of the delivery, but they also manage the people that are doing the work. If you've got an MBA and some work experience, you can normally get in at that level. Once you go up to the next level, you get the finders. The finders are the principal consultant and the partner, and they're called the finders because they're the people that find the work. And this really illustrates the skills, and we'll talk more about the skills that you need to be a consultant later. But whereas your utilization rate as a consultant might be 90%, as a partner, it can be as low as 20 to 30% because you're going to be spending so much of your time trying to win work rather than billing your hours. Okay, so if we look at that's my idea of what people do within the consulting industry. If we look at how these are recruited, one of the things I wanted to get across is that very often you'll hear this phrase, the war for talent. And there is a war for talent out there, but it's not necessarily around the analyst or consultant level. Firms recruit vast numbers of analysts and consultants. And if you're going to that level, then get your CV in, fill out the application form, and practice that case interview. It's very important. There are vast numbers applying for this, tens of millions, if Accenture are to be believed. However, the real war for talent is around the mid and upper levels. And this is because very often consultants will leave the industry after 5 to 7 years, and therefore you get this gap at the middle level. Experienced consultants who can manage other consultants, and there's a real skill gap there. So if you have some work experience, or if you've got experience as a consultant, then you're in a relatively good position to move elsewhere if you want, or possibly if you want to demand a slightly higher salary. If we move from that to the different sectors, I've just taken a few sectors out here. Again, this was work done by Source for Consulting. And these boxes move around, but it shows that some sectors are more easy to recruit for, and some sectors are expanding more, and so it's you're more likely to be able to get into, say, the public sector than you might be to be able to get into the financial services sector. There's a question from Monica which says, why are so many middle managers leaving the industry? If it's okay, I've got a slide on that in a couple of minutes, so I'll cover that then, if I may.
And I will again mention, we're getting questions about making the move or switching from one kind of firm to another. We won't get into any detail on that. That's for later webinars. But we do have a question about advising consultants on how to be careful not getting stapled to one particular industry. This can be terribly diverse if you don't have industry diverse. I don't know if that's the correct word. Where if I understand this question, basically most students who get hired directly into the consulting industry are hired as generalists. However, those of you who say have a very strong industry background, say doing your MBA after 3 or 4 years in an industry, you will be looked at more and more as an industry expert, but essentially all students are seen as being part of a generalist pool, at least to start with. And one last question is, does hard to recruit mean from the employer's perspective, meaning
yes,
they
yes,
are
does,
in demand?
Yes, I just saw that question, Michael. It's a good question. Yes, hard to recruit is from the employer's perspective. So this survey was of employers, asking them what they found hard to recruit versus easy to recruit. So yes, okay. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide. Okay, so this really reflects something that I'm going to talk about in the next two slides, which is the importance of soft skills. And we talked about engineers earlier, and very often when I talk to MBA students about what skills they think are going to get them into the consulting industry, it's around their analytical skills. But actually, if you talk to recruiters, they often say that the skills that are needed are the sales skills and the ability to develop a relationship with clients. And this is very much around your soft skills, about your ability to learn, your ability to communicate, and your ability to be emotionally intelligent. And they're not just the skills that will get you into consultancy, but they also become increasingly important as you go up the ranks. And if we look at the next slide, this is some interesting research that was looking at the reasons why some consultants were made redundant. Again, it's not around technical competence. It's kind of assumed that everybody who becomes a consultant is going to be great on Excel and great on PowerPoint, and that's true. However, the difficult side of things is around coachability. Do you listen to feedback, and do you act on feedback? And in my experience, I've now taught over 3,000 MBA students a consultancy module, and there's very often a slight, I don't want to say arrogance, but a slight overconfidence with some MBA students. They leave the course, they believe they know how the world works, and they want to get on with making money. And that's fantastic, but it can irritate clients, and it's something to be aware of, to listen to feedback, especially when it's coming from your team leader or your partner. Because if you don't listen to it, it can be an easy way of not getting the full bonus at the end of the year, and we don't want that. Okay, the good news, if you look at this slide, is that consultancies are great at training people. So if you look at, even though there's been a decline in the amount of training during the recession, consultancies are still some of the top trainers in any industry. And the reason is because of the skills I talked about earlier. If you're going to be a successful consultancy, you need people who can sell, you need people who can network, and you need people who can communicate well. And for that reason, they put in a lot of time and effort into training. And so if you go into a consultancy, you're likely to get training in these things. You're also possibly going to have to develop your own network. I believe that's one of the most important success factors in making your way up the career ladder of consultancy. Okay, so if we go to the next slide, this addresses, I hope to address now, the question that I think Megan asked earlier, which was around why so many consultants leave relatively early. These figures show that on average, a consultant with an MBA will leave after 5 years, and a consultant without an MBA will leave after 7 years in the industry. There's various reasons for that. Sometimes it's simply around the workload. Very often consultants will go in straight after university, they don't have a family, they travel the world, and they're quite happy working 6 days a week, 14 hours a day, as long as they're rewarded and challenged. Once people start to settle down, once they get families, then their priorities change. Now, that's one reason. There are also many other reasons. One of the things I hear very commonly from consultants is that after they've seen the same part of the project over and over again, for example, the strategy or perhaps the management role or the program management, they want to see the whole project. And a lot of the people who left, who I know, wanted to work as a client manager and actually manage a whole project. And what consultancy gives you is the ability to join a client organization generally at a more senior level. If you're going up a career ladder through a client organization, it can take you 10, 20 years to get to senior management. Very often, management consultancy can be a fast track into some of those positions. So there are two or three of the reasons why people leave. John, have you got any that you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would say, I guess, in closing, because we're getting near the end of this, although I think we have some questions still, is that let's look at some of the big names in the world right now that started as consultants, the obvious one being Mitt Romney, whether you support him or not, Lou Gerstner, the former CEO of IBM, many, many government officials, many heads of other corporations all come out of consulting. And I would like to say, as like myself, I entered consulting thinking I was going to spend 2 years and ended up spending my entire career. I'd like to think that many people on this call are looking at this as a possible longer-term option. Clearly, we are always happy to see people choose this as a longer-term option. But equally so, we're also happy to see that people go on and make great careers using what they learned in their first few years out in the workforce as a consultant. But and the other thing is the boomerang, what we call the boomerangs, those who, like myself, went to work for a client, in this case Sony, spent some years out of consulting and then come back into the consulting field with additional expertise, maturity, and so forth that they can bring to bear and to help make the consulting industry a better industry and better able to serve clients. Joe, was there anything else you wanted to add until we before we get to our final questions?
No, not really. Well, I suppose my own reflection is that I was in consultancy for 7 years. It was hard work, but I learned a huge amount, much more than I think I would have done in any other industry. I was one of those people that decided to choose a much slower pace of life in academia. And although I'm still fascinated by the industry, I certainly found as I got a bit older, I needed to slow down a little bit. I realize this doesn't apply to all of us, John, but but certainly from my perspective, I got a bit tired.
And I see we have some questions. So, Sally, would you like to pose some of the questions?
Sure. Here's the questions. What makes someone a better fit for consulting other than, say, investment banking?
Okay. Well, John, I'm happy to start with this one if you want.
Well, all right. I'm happy to start because I actually did both.
Okay, brilliant. Go for it.
Depends on what kind of investment banking we're talking about. Sales and trading is about as different as consulting as you can get. Consulting is about longer-term sustainability, very much long-term. Sales and trading tends to be about very short-term, taking positions, trading on those positions, understanding quick changes in the marketplace, and so forth. So that is very different. And if you want to be a consultant, I would not say you should become a trader, and vice versa. If you're talking about corporate finance or relationship-oriented type of banking, then I would say it gets much closer, with one or two major differences. Obviously, we as consultants, the bulk of our revenue is made on projects that are pre-negotiated and are not success fee-based, although that is changing as well. Whereas many, many banks are, you don't make your money until you actually close the deal, whatever that deal is. So if you're someone who's more interested, again, in these longer-term, less risky propositions, you know, you negotiate the contract and then you fulfill it, this might be a better fit. If you're someone who likes the thrill of the chase, the deal-making, and so forth, and the risk that comes with that, investment banking may be a better fit. Both options offer lots of upside potential in terms of a career, in terms of income. But again, there's slight differences in the lifestyle. Joe, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think you've hit that on the head. I mean, the banking sector salaries have just leapt up over the last 10 years, and it's hard for consultancy to keep pace with that. But I would say on the converse side, as a consultant, you're more likely to get your hands dirty. Instead of being stuck behind a computer screen for your day, you're very often going to be dealing with teams, dealing with clients, and exercising a variety of skills, which I think perhaps makes you come out a more rounded person.
Great. Thank you, Sally. Another question?
Okay. Will the outside consulting firms grow faster than in-house consulting?
Okay. I presume by in-house consulting, they're talking about internal consultancies?
I believe so.
If that's the case, then internal consultancies are a very different kettle of fish. Very often, although they might be called internal consultancies, very often they work around compliance, i.e. making sure that different departments within the organization are doing things the way they're meant to be doing. Internal consultancies start up and die very, very often. The lifespan of an internal consultancy can be very short, not because it's not useful and not because it's not making a difference, but because internal consultancy is often seen as discretionary spend, and therefore it's very vulnerable to being got rid of. So I think the question about expansion is a bit of a misnomer there. I'm not sure if I'm missing the point of that question. John?
No, I would say I think you got it. I was just talking to the head of Bayer's internal consulting division this morning, and he's doing very well. I mean, he said they're growing their internal consulting group quite quickly, but he also said, of course, the outside consulting world is growing equally fast, if not faster. So I think they're both doing very, very well. It's really a question of where your heart beats fastest and what you really want to do. But they're both very strong areas. Sally?
For those of you that are interested, I have a presentation about internal consultancy. I have a website called consulting-ideas.com, and it's all free information up there. I've got no vested interest. So I occasionally put my lectures up there, and I do have one on internal consultancy. So do feel free to go and have a look at it if you want.
And that answers, conversant to that, I wanted to say that we're getting a lot of questions about where you can find this presentation and the podcast of this webinar and so forth. Please remember to go to our website, as we said at the beginning, www.consultingcareerconnection.com. We'll throw this up on the screen in a second again. There you'll find all these materials. We'll also link Joe's website into our website, so you can follow your way to his website, which also has lots and lots of information. But again, www.careerconsultingconnection.com. And I believe we have time for one more question, Sally.
Okay, and then we're going to take a minute just to do a couple brief evaluation questions. Here's another question. How have the firm's recruiting strategies changed over the years?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. I would say that without a doubt, they have gotten, again, as the population gets more diverse, especially who consulting firms are hiring, as are their sources of talent. So they are going to many, many, many different places now, finding many, many ways to find appropriate applicants. Through social media, again, through organizations like ourselves and so forth. One thing we are seeing is that consulting firms are becoming less dependent on the top MBA programs to feed them their candidates, their new hires. So a lot of them are going, as I said, to what we might call lower tier and smaller MBA programs, so not so much the Harvards and the Kelloggs and so forth, They're also trying to go to more quote unquote out of the way places. Geographically, I mean, places like Thunderbird, Southern California, where you may not just have the massive number of schools in one location that helps them recruit. They're recognizing now that they need to get beyond just the top MBA schools. There is a huge demand for excellent talent. So, again, they're getting very adept at finding that talent in all sorts of ways that they traditionally didn't use. Joe, would you add anything?
Yeah, well, two quick things. Number one is that I suppose just in terms of the sheer numbers have shot through the roof over the last 10 years. So the process has got more professional and more proceduralized. If you want to get into the consulting industry, I can't stress enough that you practice your analytical skills. There's lots of books you can buy about that, and also practice your case interviews. I realize we'll cover those in a different presentation, but it's such a machine now that you need to tick all the boxes very clearly before you get to the partner interview and before you start to interact with people. The second thing I was going to really reiterate was John's point around how consultancies have changed. And consultancies now do a lot more programs with universities in terms of often delivering courses or coming along and doing guest lectures. And if you can, get along to those, meet the consultant, network with them, and it certainly won't do you any harm.
Great. And with that, I think we will finish up. Just very quickly, I'd like to make a plug for Joe's new book, or the second edition of the book, Management Consultancy. I actually wrote the beginning of the introduction to one of the chapters there, published by Oxford University Press. And Joe, when will that be coming? Actually, the first edition is already available on Amazon.com. It's a great book. It's an excellent introduction to the industry. I would recommend it to anybody who's looking to make a career in our industry. And when is the second edition coming out, Joe?
The second edition should be out in March. If people don't want to buy it, there's a lot of free information on the Oxford University website. There's a couple of free chapters, and also I'm happy to answer emails. If you don't fancy the book, then there's loads of information out there.
Great. With that, I thank you very much, Joe, for a very informative, excellent presentation. The hour is up. We do ask you to just maybe take 30 seconds to help us understand if we answered your questions, if we were able to help. And there are two or three things here. Obviously, the answers will be kept to us. We're the only ones who can see it. So here's the first one that we'd love some response to. And then here we have another question we'd love to have you answer. And one more in terms of the format. And one last one, which is rating Joe. And then we ask for some qualitative answers if you would care to write us anything, and you can also send us emails to info@amcf.com. Charlie? sorry, amcf.org. I just realized info@amcf.org. Thank you for that. We have perhaps now least effective elements of the webinar. Anything that we should do better, perhaps? Please, if your expectations were not realized, please just let us know why. Okay, and I'm happy to say that all the responses are yes, they were realized, so that's very nice. Although they we did get some good comments about things we could do differently or better, so thank you for that. And finally, any topics that you would like to have discussed at future CCC webinars, again, to reiterate, we do have one coming up on October 24th, which since you all took part in this one, you should be getting email announcements of that. There we will be getting more in detail into how you get started or how you prepare for your interviews, and as some of you have mentioned, start getting your foot in the door. Obviously, you're at programs, you're in the cycle for recruitment. To just give a top-level message to all of you who are looking to get into the industry or are making a career switch, the best way to do it is to excel at your interviews and to interview with the right companies and know what you want to do when you get into consulting or why you're going into consulting. And a lot of that will be addressed in the webinar on October 24th. Also, please remember to go to our website, amcf.org, and you will see under the Programs tab other webinars that will be addressed as part of this series. In addition, we will be sending out email promotions, and on the CCC website, the consultingcareerconnection.com. We'll also post upcoming webinars that will address a lot of the things that you would like to ask in addition to what we discussed today. And with this, I thank everybody for joining us. And again, big thanks to Joe Mahoney and his excellent presentation. As I said, we've seen some very helpful comments, but in general, it looks like people got a lot out of this webinar, and Joe was a big reason for that. So again, thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Thank you. Please stand by.